I'm Dave Cawley, investigative journalist and host of the podcast, Cold. Don't miss Cold's new Season 3, where I look into the unsolved disappearance of Cherie Warren, a woman last seen leaving her job at a Salt Lake City office in 1985. Police cast suspicion on Cherie's estranged husband and boyfriend, but never made any arrests or recovered Cherie's remains. Find Cold Season 3, The Search for Cherie, anywhere you get your podcasts.
Hello and welcome to the Loudmouth Project's Voices of Reason. I'm Jason Lee. Amy Donaldson is out today. Today I am joined by Christine Ishmael. She is founder of the EDI Experience. It's a nonprofit created on social media to bring education, diversity, and inclusion to people everywhere. And she's a friend of mine. So, Christine, thank you for joining me this morning.
Thank you for having me.
Okay, so I'm going to ask you to use your outside voice. But tell me, first of all, you got an interesting story. So I'm going to ask you to talk a little bit about yourself and how you came to create EDI.
Well, there were many things that were happening that brought about the creation of the EDI experience. One was you recommending that I go see that virtual reality, Traveling While Black.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
That was actually a really beginning point for me when I went and saw that. I took my daughters. You had mentioned they were in town. It was the last night that they were visiting. Do you remember that event?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I do.
They had recreated the cafeteria in Washington, D.C. in the Capitol Theater.
Yeah.
You put on the headsets, you put on the eye gear, and you actually went into that cafe.
This was at Ben's Chili Bowl, which back during the Civil Rights Movement was one of the places in the Green Book, if you remember.
Right.
This is going back. And people would stop there, and it was kind of a neutral zone, if you were to, in the nation's capital, where particularly black people can come along, sit, chat, and just feel safe.
Right.
As they're on their way, generally going south.
Right. And in that experience, it literally took you into that cafe and you heard stories, things I'd never heard before about traveling when, you know, back in the time when people had to get across the country, there were not many safe ways to go. And we had sundown towns and we had all kinds of things going on. So it was the closest I ever experienced, I think, to feeling that what another person may have gone through at that time.
I should mention that you're white.
Yes.
She's a Caucasian woman. Okay, yes.
I am. And so as a white person experiencing what a person of color may have felt or experienced as they traveled across the country, I came out of that and my daughters were with me and we were just, it was very an emotional experience and had got me thinking, what else do I not know? And so as I started exploring more of our American history and learning things that I didn't know before, it became a point where I needed to do something. I felt like I just needed to do something.
So it inspired you in that way?
It did. It did. It was a beginning.
I want to go back a little bit further even. So you grew up where?
In California.
All right, in California. And you grew up in a family that was part of the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints.
Yes, I did.
Okay. I got to say that all the time now. But can you talk about that experience and kind of leading in through your formative years and becoming an adult?
Yeah, I was raised in California, around a lot of diversity, around a lot of...
Was this Northern or Southern California?
Northern. Okay. So we were in Sacramento. And I was raised up in the Mormon church, baptized when I was 8. Raised in the church, I wasn't always active. I was a little bit of a wild teenager. And
you're a wild adult, too.
I'm a wild adult, too.
Okay, that's a little...
Okay, we'll keep that separate from this podcast.
Well, but I mean,
okay.
Wild is what I mean by that is you are a nonconformist in a lot of ways.
No. I've always been a little bit different in my thinking and not so much conformist. So being raised in the church was difficult, especially when I was a teenager. All my siblings all had friends in the church. I was the only one in my age group in the church. So my friends were not members, did not... You know,
why do you think that was? I mean, what kind of made you be a little different than just, you know, because most of us kind of follow in the footsteps of what our family did.
Yeah. I don't know. I grew up, I get along with everybody. I make friends pretty easily and I made all different kinds of friends. And I grew up being very accepting. My parents were very accepting of me, of the choices I was making back then. And they were pretty good about how they handled me when I was being a wild teenager, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But it, I had a lot of friends and they were all different and it didn't matter. I think because I had so much access to different kinds of people, it, you just grew up kind of feeling like that wasn't a big deal. It wasn't a big deal. Your color of your skin, where you came from, your background, you know. So being in the church, though, was difficult. It was difficult because most of my friends did not do that. We were out doing things that maybe the Mormon church wouldn't approve of. And so I basically left the church when I was a teenager and did not come back to it till my 30s.
Okay.
So
you get to be an adult and in your 30s. So your kids have mixed race too.
Yes.
And I mean, that's kind of, again, part of your journey, right? And so when you you get married and you have kids with an African-American fellow, what? How does that impact you and your life at that point? How old were you?
When I first got married, or when I first got married, I was 23.
Okay.
I've been married twice, but my first marriage was 23 years old. I already had a 3-year-old daughter.
Mm-hmm.
He was black. He was from Selma, Alabama.
Really?
Yeah. And so his views and opinions were way different than my California, you know.
Sensibilities. Right?
Yeah.
Had you ever,
totally
did you ever get a chance to go back to Selma with him?
No, I didn't. And I still want to go back because there are some family members that are still there that we want to go visit and take my daughters, you know, to go visit. So, but yeah, it was an interesting and it was a very difficult marriage. And I think it's because I didn't understand a lot of things that he had seen at that time. I get it now. I get it now. And that was important. And we've had conversations since that, you know, I haven't, he's still in California. We're out here in Utah, but had those conversations to say, I kind of understand now
you get
what
it
your struggles
now.
Were. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Yeah.
So how old is your, how old are your kids?
So I have one that is 35 and they go down to 15.
Okay.
So.
And so for you, I mean, this is, again, this is helping to form the person you become, right?
Right.
And when you realize that life was different for people of color than it was for, you know, people of the majority Caucasians, how does that lead you to try to in the raising of your children, for instance?
Well, I feel really lucky that I came from California. My kids attended schools that had kids in wheelchairs, kids that had special needs, and then a lot of diversity. People were from everywhere in Sacramento. Sacramento was the place where most people lived that drove to San Francisco every day to go to work. So we had just a lot of diversity. Raising them out there was a great thing to do. And then when we came to Utah, it was like I had remarried. I went through a divorce and then I remarried and decided to bring the kids out there. So ask me that question again.
About?
What you just asked me.
No, how does it shape who you become or?
Yeah.
Well, you raised your kids. I mean, and by the way, not unimportant, your second husband, also black.
Yes.
But he was a little different because he's Caribbean?
No, he was originally, well, his family's Trinidad and Barbados, but he was born and raised in England.
Okay.
So the differences between America's history and
England's
history is different.
Right, so now you got another cultural difference.
Yeah, and right. That kind of came into play. So when I married him, I had 4 children. So I was single mom. He took my 4 children, raised them as his own. We had 2 together. So we end up with 6. He wants to come back to Utah. He loves Utah. He went to school in Utah.
Okay.
He had great experiences in Utah. But I was from California, and I was like, you know our children are black, right? There's not a lot of diversity out there in Utah. Are you sure this is a good place?
But he's also a member of the church.
He's also a member of the church and thinking that the culture out here will be a great place to raise our kids.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a great place to raise our kids. My kids got into a lot of opportunities and things that maybe they wouldn't have gotten in California, but there was a lot of issues as well. And him being from England, I'm like, why did we not have these conversations about racism and things like that? It was different in England because I've talked to his brother. He's passed. But since then, I've talked to his brother. I'm like, these weren't conversations we had in our home. How do we protect our children? How do we do these things? Because in England, the experience is so different.
And England does have its own issues with race and ethnicity. However, not in the same way that we have them here.
And does not have our history.
Right, right. So when we come back, I want to continue this discussion. And again, leading up to the point where you have some more epiphanies from your kids, kind of explaining their lives. And then going back to that inspiration to start EDI and what you hope to kind of use that as a platform and a vehicle for. Speaking today with Christine Ishmael, she is a founder of the EDI Experience, which is a nonprofit she created online to bring education, diversity, and inclusion to people here in her community and everywhere else where you can touch folks who have different backgrounds and what that means in building inclusion, diversity, and just having people feel more a part of whatever community they live in. You're listening to Voices of Reason.
A gun in the face.
Then all of a sudden they all kind of lined up. They pointed their guns at me. And this is the point where I thought, I'm going to die today.
Started 2 years of horror for an American in Venezuela.
They said, you need to give us your phone and get ready because you're coming with us.
I'm Becky Bruce, and I spent a year researching and piecing together Josh and Tammy Holt's story about their ordeal in a notorious prison.
That's when everything started to turn bad. We had another pound on the door. Boom, boom, boom. And there was the police once again.
You can binge all of the episodes of Hope in Darkness on kslpodcasts.com or wherever you get your podcasts.
Jason Lee back with the Loudmouth Project's Voices of Reason. Today joined by Christine Ishmael. She is the founder of the EDI Experience. And EDI, of course, meaning education, well, in this case, education, diversity, and inclusion. So we're talking about kind of your life, and you married a second time and moved with your husband. Who, now, so you actually had drifted away from your religious upbringing, and in marrying your second husband, Christine's a friend of mine, so this guy was a saint, right? and he just had so many wonderful qualities. But he also is a person who grew up in a different environment. He grew up in Britain, mm-hmm. So he had different sensibilities. And it wasn't that he was naive necessarily. It's just that his experience was so different. Mm-hmm. It wasn't something that readily came to him to try to understand how living as an African-American person in or a person of African heritage in America is different and how it may impact the way his kids grew up and the lives they experienced when they weren't necessarily around you guys. So how do you kind of convey that to him when, you know, that literally wasn't a conversation he would have around his dinner table growing up?
Yeah, there were things that happened when we left California and came out to Utah. It was a big decision because there is still a lack of diversity mm-hmm. out here in Utah. And my kids being recognized as black in this country because Even though their mom's white and their dad's black, they are raised as black children. I understand that. But they began to have experiences. There was a time that in high school, my son was pushed into a closet by his teacher. It was a cooking class. And I don't know if he was smarting off to her. I don't know what was going on. But he got pushed into a closet and she scratched his arm all down. So he was bleeding. He came home bleeding that day. And we pursued it with the school district. It was right at Christmas break. It was just this crazy thing. We took it pretty far trying to get some consequence for this teacher who felt like it was okay to attack students. She attacked two boys in that class.
Not just your son, another one too?
Yeah, there was another kid with him. And so those kind of things happen. And so there was never that conversation was, why did this happen? Why did she particularly choose my son? You know, there's those questions.
Was the other kid black too?
Pardon me?
Was the other kid black too?
I'm not sure what the other kid was. Yeah, yeah. I don't remember. But my son came home and he really didn't even say anything. But when we found out about it, and I was out of town at the time, but my husband went back to the school and talked to people and said, what's going on? But there was never was she choosing him for certain reasons?
Right,
all those questions that kind of come up in your mind. What was the reason for this? Why did she lose it with mm-hmm. my kid versus the other kid? The other kid didn't get scratched. He got put into the closet with him.
Okay.
But,
Still a problem if you ask
me. Yeah,
yeah.
Yes, so things like that would happen. And the conversations really didn't take place until after he passed.
After your husband passed.
After my husband passed. Mm-hmm. There were things that, like my son was pulled over by the police and held for 2 hours. They searched his car. He stood on the side of the road while they went through his vehicle over and over and over looking for something that wasn't there.
Right.
there's been things that have happened at school with my daughters, just comments, kind of mm-hmm. that unconscious bias kind of thing going on. But all these things came out, and I had a different perspective after he had left. I had left the church after he passed. It was a choice that I made, and it changed a lot of my thinking. I almost feel like not having that in my life opened my mind to a lot of other things. And then as history came out and things began to happen, we kept seeing things happen in the news. I started learning about a lot more about our American history, things we were never taught in school, having experiences like that, traveling while black experience, watching, reading, just kind of letting myself learn so much more. People I was meeting different people now, you know,
mm-hmm.
Their conversations, people I would meet and they're sharing their experiences was like, wait a minute, there's some serious problems with our country. This is still going on.
So when your husband was alive, I mean, even though, again, he grew up different culturally.
Yeah.
Didn't he have any of those experiences himself? Because, I mean, before you start talking to him, you don't know that he's, grew up somewhere else.
Right.
He still never experienced that enough to want to have those conversations around the dinner table or anything like that?
Yeah, the conversations were, he was in England until he was about a teenager, and mm-hmm. then they went back to Trinidad to help a family member that was sick. Trinidad is a different
altogether,
world.
Yes.
Yeah, and that was basically survival. So yeah, street fights, walking down with his brothers. He had two brothers. Walking down, he talked to the kids about experiences he had having to protect himself. He was always teaching the kids how to protect themselves.
Mm-hmm.
If somebody grabs you, what to do. So he always sat with his back to the wall at a restaurant. You know, he always talked when we were in a movie theater. What will we do if we need to get out of the movie theater?
That's
so
right.
He kind of thought like that. And it also made me start thinking about that. Okay, being more aware of our surroundings and quit taking for granted that things are always good. It's not always good for everybody.
Because he knew his safety could always be in danger.
Absolutely.
Right,
and
right.
He was always thinking ahead.
You know, and I'm one of those guys. You know me. So I always say to myself, if you don't live somebody else's experience, if you don't walk in their shoes, you don't necessarily understand. It's like, as a guy, I don't understand what a woman, Amy and, you know, I have to be educated in those same kind of ways because I take it for granted that as a male, this is how things are. But if you're a female, things are different. If you're a white person, you don't necessarily even consider what it would be like to be a person of color because it's just not a thing for you.
Right.
And if your circle is not diverse, then those things wouldn't be brought up to you.
Right.
And so you have to have, I mean, it helps you have a broader scope of people. So you also mentioned that all your kids are mixed race too. So what I wanted to ask you was, when did they come to you and talk about their experiences? I mean, you mentioned the one kid who was shoved in a closet, which is a whole other issue. But, and their experiences growing up in school with classmates or people their ages, obviously it might be different in California, but when they come to a more monolithic place, a more homogenous place, does that change? Does it get better or worse?
Well, they started sharing as they got older. We had a lot of conversations when they were in high school. My son would mention things like, he was always, hey, this is my black friend, Eric. He's like, why can't I just be Eric? You know, the N-word was used all the time at the high schools they went. There were things that would happen at the football.
He went to all white high schools for the most part.
Yeah, pretty much.
And they're still dropping the N-word.
Pretty much. We were in Utah. Absolutely. Still. They say there were
lots
of things said.
In what context? I'm sorry. How does that even come up?
Some people feel like they're very comfortable using that word and throwing that around and thought that my son would be okay with it, and my son was not okay with it. It affected his experience. He now lives in London. I mean, it's such a much more diverse where he lives.
Yeah,
and I don't know if that was part of his decisions or he feels more comfortable there because he's more accepted. I don't know, but those were conversations that we had. Why can't I be just Eric?
I got you.
You know, so things like that would happen. Football games were, fights would take place, and then they'd round up all the kids of color and put them over here and make them sit with their hands behind their back at the high school game, and the white kids would be over on another table.
Did you watch this?
Standing. I wasn't there, but my son came home and shares these experiences with me. So there were things that we were aware things were going on, and we talked to them, and we taught them how to be safe. My conversations have changed now. Now it's about if you're in the store, keeping your receipt with you, certain things like being followed in the store. My daughter's been followed in the store. She's talked about with her friends, if we're ever pulled over, this is how things could go down. This is what we need to do to be safe. You know, things like that. The conversations have changed because our world is now with social media, and we're actually able to witness firsthand when things are happening. When I started the EDI experience, I wondered if I would have enough content. And then Ahmaud Arbery died, and then Breonna Taylor, and we watched George Floyd die. And all the things that happened, the content blew up. There was so much to talk about and so much that needs to happen.
So when we come back, we're going to get more into that and how she's developed what was an idea into just kind of this local phenomenon. And what can be done, how the EDI experience can be used to help broaden all of our perspectives and hopefully, you know, make a change in this community that can be, you know, replicated in places all around the country. Speaking today with Christina Ishmael, who is explaining to me how she was inspired to start a diversity group by what she, you know, I guess something good did come out of George Floyd's death, because I find it really hard to find that. But you did. So I am grateful for that. You're listening to Voices of Reason. Back with the Loudmouth Project's Voices of Reason, Jason Lee, flying solo today, joined by Christine Ishmael. She is the founder of the EDI Experience. It's a nonprofit she created on social media to bring education, diversity, and inclusion to people everywhere. And we were kind of getting into it. You know, you were kind of inspired to start EDI through watching so much of the sadness and tragedies that seem to be happening, you know, on the regular for a long time. You know, just every week there was some new video and you know, some new heartbreak to worry about. But rather than just kind of watch, you were inspired to do something. And I mean, as a person who didn't have to deal with that personally yourself, but you realized that your children and your family, it touched you in a way that made you want to do something. Was this part of something that you think was building up in you all along? Or was it was this just a moment in time? It just kind of hit you.
I think it's always been something in me. I can remember when I was 7 or 8, the first time I heard the N-word, and not knowing what that word meant, but knowing the feeling that came when I heard it was just a feeling of icky. I knew it was something not good.
I get the feeling of icky too when I hear it, even today.
I can understand that.
Yeah.
So the first time I heard it, and then just because of my choice of friends and the people that I associate with, I try not to judge. I try to understand people all have their different stories and experiences. And I think that's kind of always something that's been in me. When I chose to date and brought my first black boyfriend home, my parents were kind and accepting. You know, it could have been so much different than having mixed race children. I've heard and been people have used the N-word about my choice around my children with me there, you know, as their mother. You know, I've been called certain names and things like that. So, but my experience is so different. I think everything that was happening in our country, all of the murders we were watching, the things that were happening, but also learning about our country's history.
Mm-hmm.
Going back, that's what I was just thinking, in 67 was Loving versus Virginia.
Yeah. That's right.
That was in my lifetime. 21 years later, I married a black man. That made it okay so I could do that. Tuskegee experiments ended in my lifetime,
right.
73. I mean, I was alive. I was, you know, younger, but learning about these things that had happened in my lifetime and then going back into, you know, 400 years back, you have to pay attention. And once you learn those things, it changes how you think. It changes your perspective of the world and what you've been taught. And you have to start questioning and you have to start studying. So that's what I did. I started reading. I started researching. I started learning so much more. And after you learn that, you can't go backwards. You can't go back to your comfort zone. You have to go forward. And I really, really like John Lewis's quote that he did. And I have it hanging in my office.
About good
if
trouble.
You see something that is not right, not fair, not just, then you have a moral obligation to do something about it. And I felt that that was the way I could do it, was actually, it started as a Facebook group. It was a place where we could have safe conversations. People could ask questions without feeling stupid or ignorant. And we've gotten in some discussions that got a little rough and intense in there, and people sharing their opinions. But hopefully that's what I've created as a safe place for you to come in and learn.
So talk about that a little bit. You know, you, your creation, what do you hope people get from it? And how, what kinds of tools do you use to kind of help move that needle?
Well, Facebook has been a good spot to start. I have a website that I'm ready to launch, and the communications and being able to pour content into that Facebook group and have discussions about everything. This is a diversity group, so all kinds of different topics come up in there. And that's what I was saying, is that it should be a safe place where you can come and ask those questions. So I try to nurture that. You can ask hard questions. Mm-hmm. I get a lot of private messages. I get a lot of, did you see this video? Did you see what happened here? I've learned to go back and do better on my research and study a lot of videos that come through, because sometimes we don't get the whole story.
That's true.
That's important, and it's important
context
to teach.
Important.
Yeah, that you go back and you research a little bit before you just post. It's grown. Like, it's grown over time, and because of things that were going on, more people were coming in wanting mm-hmm. to have conversations. I feel, because I'm in the state of Utah now, that there is blatant racism, but there is also people that just have not been exposed to other people. And it's just, I want to put those people all in a room together where we can have conversations and where it becomes more comfortable to have conversations with other people. I remember working for the state when I got out here, and a lot of those people had never left Utah County. So their experiences were limited to what they had experienced in Utah County growing up their whole lives. So it was interesting coming from California, working with state workers, and I was like, you guys can't say that. You guys know that you can't say those kind of things. So
they grew up in a place where they didn't have any pushback.
Yeah,
they didn't know.
Yeah, there yeah. wasn't. And so it was just lack of exposure in their cases. It wasn't a hatred or anything. So I introduced them to a lot of different things, you
right.
know. And so I think that putting – that was my purpose for the launch of this event. There's a guy in Ogden that runs Nurture the Creative Mind, and I went and met with him, and he's done a nonprofit out there that's amazing. He's doing great things out there. He said, Christine, you don't have to have everything in place. Just start.
Right.
Just start. Things will come. Your connections will come. And as I've been out here over the last 4 years, I cannot – amazing connections. I've made connections with people that eventually lead to something else, mm-hmm. and then it's just an interesting way. So as I've done this, I decided we just got to get this launch out. So it's putting people in a room that night. We're going to have local businesses there that they can talk about how they got started and share their stories. Because a lot of people I've talked to, and I did a feature on there where I featured Black-owned businesses here mm-hmm. in Utah and got to interview these people, and I heard amazing stories of resilience, because they did come up with some resistance as they started their businesses or have continued to start, with people being opposed to the color of their skin. I have a friend that runs a moving company, has shown up and been told to leave the property because they saw who he was. After they had scheduled the move, paid for the move, he shows up and they don't want him there. Things like that. And so these people will be in a room able to share their story and also how they overcame those things and have answers for how to do better. And we can do better in Utah. So main focus is Utah at first, but this is a nationwide group. We have people from all over. So I would like to see it grow and be able to continue those conversations.
So for you, I mean, it's creating more understanding and trying to reach people in a way that previously they didn't really have the option to do. I mean, I guess you always do, but it takes a lot of effort.
Right.
And in this way, you're kind of bringing it to them rather than having to go find it.
Right. Well, and I mentioned in Messenger, people will message me. Help me understand what white privilege is. A white person asking me, what is white privilege? And so we can have conversations. A lot of it, they don't understand.
They don't.
And so if I can help that breach that bridge, that's what I hope to do. And so I have to stay knowledgeable. I have to be, you know, be always learning and be open. It's teaching open-mindedness, that maybe we don't know the whole story. And so maybe your decisions about how you feel about other people, you don't have the whole story.
Right.
But you put people in room with other professionals, people who are successful business people, people that are just starting out. You just open up a room and a safe place for conversation.
I think building bridges is very important, but I also love the idea that you are willing to try to get these people in the room to understand what they don't understand.
Right.
You know, because so much of what ends up happening is people don't know what they don't know.
Right.
And if they're willing to be enlightened, if they're willing to know, I mean, it takes humility, right, to say, I don't know everything.
Right.
And because that's humility is in pretty short supply these days in the world, because there's right. folks who just will literally deny truth in right. the face of facts.
Right.
You know, so you have to, they have to be willing to accept that they don't know every darn thing.
Yeah.
Which is not what I want to say. When we come back, I want to continue this discussion. Also, you bring up John Lewis. Love John Lewis. And I wonder, you know, he said, this is one of his quotes, he tweeted in June of 18, you know, we can't get lost in a sea of despair, be hopeful, be optimistic. Our struggle is not the struggle of the day, a week, a month, or a year. It is a struggle of a lifetime. And as Christine is wont to do, never, ever be afraid to make some noise and get in some good trouble. Necessary trouble. Good trouble. I love that. Remember that, folks. There's always a way to get into some good trouble. You're listening to Voices of Reason. We are back with the Loudmouth Project's Voices of Reason. I'm Jason Lee, along today with Christine Ishmael, who founded the EDI Experience, Education, Diversity, Inclusion. And you have an event coming up, because this, she's trying to do everything more than me in a lot of ways. I feel like, you know, I'm being outdone here, and not to say that you're white, but you're a white woman. I'm shirking my responsibilities to my people, because you're having to help me. But talk about putting together events like the one coming up, and what you want to see come out of that.
Well, so would you like me to mention
yes,
when the event
absolutely,
is?
Yeah.
Okay, so. I'm doing a launch. I've been building a website, learning how to do the website, and EDI just needs to be launched. We need to – it's basically bringing people together in a room so we can have conversations, we can open – people can meet each other. People can – because now we're – the pandemic stopped a lot of that stuff. I've been wanting to do this for a long time. So on September 25th, down at a place called The Shop, which is at 350 East 400 South, in Salt Lake City. It's a beautiful spot. We've got the third floor, main floor, and a rooftop. Bringing people in there, I'm going to have some businesses featured that are coming in as sponsors, and they'll get a chance to kind of share their stories of how they began here in Utah. And we're going to have food. Sauce Boss Southern Kitchen is cooking and bringing in some delicious food. And
you had me a Sauce Boss.
I had you a Sauce Boss. And we've got a DJ upstairs. But just putting people in the room together, the space is beautiful. Views of downtown up at the top. So I'm excited to do it. So it's Saturday, September 25th from 7 to 10. This is a free event. So come on down and meet a lot of other people. EDI... The future of EDI for me is going to be, I hope to have advocates trained down in the future so that, especially when I've talked to my children about things that have come up at school, an advocate that can go into a school and sit down with a teacher, the students, the parents, possibly the police department if things happen in those situations, and be able to advocate so that both sides are understood and maybe find out where the problem started in the first place.
Mm-hmm.
We've heard a lot of things in the schools with teachers and surprising behaviors and conversations that shouldn't be happening, but and with critical race theory, the things that are being allowed to be taught and talked about.
Critical race theory, not a thing, people. Just throwing that out there.
Just
we had some folks on here telling you about it. It's not a thing.
So being able to have somebody go advocate when there are situations. There was a march I participated in about a year ago, and it was based on youth in Utah. Black youth in Utah came on the stage and told their stories of experiences, and it tugged at your heartstrings. You were mm-hmm. like, how do these kids have to go through that? How do we teach our kids to have those conversations so that people can learn that maybe the way that they're talking to them or their friends, how the way you pose that is not okay, and teach our kids how to advocate for themselves. But able, you know, EDI will have future experiences. We want to do a monthly like business meetup where other people who have had successes here in Utah can share with others how to get to where they are. So there's a lot of things I want to do with it. There's a ton of stuff I want to do with it, but I have to take baby steps. Mm-hmm. So.
And we appreciate you being able to want to do it, too. You know, listen, and I'm obviously going to be joining her in this effort because I'm going to be one of those people trying to yap at other folks who may not know about our show.
Yeah.
And what we've been trying to do for the last 5 years is just get a civil conversation. You know,
right.
you mentioned how just having conversations with people can humanize us all, right?
Right.
And I think one of the things that is in short supply, not, you know, it's out there, but we don't see it as much as we would like, because as a former journalist for over two decades, the things that get on the news are the stuff that are aberration. They don't really happen as much as we think. They do happen commonly, but not in so commonly as the everyday stuff. Nobody wants to hear that people got up this morning, did their thing, went home, slept, and start all over again. You know, that's too normal. It's passé, right? But that's what happens to the vast majority of us. And then there's this small percentage, probably less than 1%, to be honest with you, that has crazy stuff happen. But if we can get in a room and I can talk with somebody who may not have had much experience with people of color, or having another experience with another business person who's had some of the same issues that I might have had,
right.
We can talk these things through in a way that can be productive for everybody.
Right.
And it'll help the people who need to be better informed, and it'll help us maybe be able to convey those ideas in a way that is more palatable so that they get it quicker.
Right.
Because I don't mind people pushing back to some degree, but I want people to be willing to be to listen and understand, and then willing to be able to make a change if they realize that their behavior is, you know, antithetical to what they espouse.
Yeah. Or even recognize that it is a behavior that
could
be perceived a certain way. Just sometimes awareness and somebody having a conversation with you to say, can you understand how this would appear, mm-hmm. or how this would sound when you say it that way? That's what I'm talking about. That lack of exposure, not. And a lot of people will say, is this okay to say? Is this okay to say? And I'm like,
I'd rather you do that than
no,
say
no, don't say that. Yeah. You know what I mean? I was able to
don't
go
touch my hair if I had any.
Yes, everybody touches my kid's hair. Up in the airport, somebody walked up and ran her fingers through my daughter's hair, and she was like, "Oh my goodness!" But
if your daughter slugs her, then somehow she's the bad person, right?
Exactly. I was able to go talk to the school district where my kids were raised. They had me come in and talk about diversity. I got to take my daughter with me, and this was out in Utah County. The principal was amazing. He took the teachers up by four-wheelers to the top of a mountain. They had different little spots, but at the top of that mountain, you got to look over the community, these teachers did, of where their students were. We have a lot of polygamists out there. We have a lot of there was some diversity, and so they talked to different families to introduce these teachers to who they are teaching. It made this more personal experience. But my daughter and I got to talk about things and conversations, and there were some interesting conversations.
I can only imagine.
Yeah. Is this word okay to use? Would it be okay if I said this to my student? So it was a great way to open up that door to communication, and they came away thinking, okay, you know, this is something and that we need to be aware of and pay attention of, because these are our kids. We love our kids. We want to teach them well, but we want to do it the right way. Right.
I had an experience in a last year or so where a colleague of mine in a newsroom at the time, you know, so, I forgot, some relatively famous person in the community used the word boy. And I said, you know, people often want to ask me, white people often want to ask me, is it good to say these words? Or what's the problem with this? I'm like, okay. So A, I don't ever get to be called boy. Mm-mm. That's just a word that goes away. Mm-hmm. You may say that to your other friends, but you don't say it to a black person. Not certainly not to a black guy, a black man. Those are fighting words. Because that was used to demean us by, you know, slave owners initially, and then, you know, throughout Jim Crow. Mm-hmm. It's to somehow make you less than.
Right.
All right. So you create conflict by using that word. The same way if I call the woman, honey or toots or some, nobody says that anymore. But, you know, Don Draper, Mad Men, that kind of stuff. Right. You don't get to call me what you want to put me in my place.
Right.
Without some consequences.
Right.
So what I appreciate what you're saying is when it's explained to them why you can't do it, okay, I'm good to explain it to you, But just remember, don't feel like we're being the ones that are, you know, being overly aggressive or being too upset, too sensitive. No, you're being too insensitive.
Right.
You got to own that and then say to yourself, okay, well, that behavior has to change.
Right.
Rather than expecting me to change my behavior because you want to be able to get away with being a jerk.
Right. So, and yeah. And don't raise your voice when you're trying to explain.
Right. I can't be, upset about it. Don't be so emotional. I'm like, well, don't say dumb stuff.
Yeah.
And I won't be emotional.
Yeah.
And just because you're saying it calmly just means you're just being a passive aggressive jerk.
Mm-hmm.
Not, you know, that you're somehow smarter and easy to, you know, keep yourself together. Because I'm going to tell you something. All these MAGA people, they're not calm when they're talking to you.
No.
They're loud, proud, you know, screaming up at the top of their lungs. When they go into the Capitol building and storming the Capitol, there's nothing calm about what they did. It was craziness. And anybody who supported that, watching that, you know, that's what I'm talking about. You can't have it both ways. You
can't
be
handled so differently.
The perpetrator and the victim at the same time. That's right. just not how that works. Christine, do you have any last comments you would like to make? And how do we find you, by the way?
Huh?
How do we find you? How do we find
you? You can find me. Okay, so my website will launch and it'll be the ediexperience.com. Working out the last glitches of that mm-hmm. and making sure I know what I'm doing when I launch that. But you can reach me at the ediexperience@gmail.com. We have a
Facebook
group called the EDI Experience. You need to request to join. There are a couple rules we have you abide by. But come on in there. We're getting our numbers are going up and it's good. And the conversations are happening. I'm really excited that I'm going to start a podcast called under the EDI umbrella called Conversations with Friends. And that will lead to a lot of dialogue and things that I can bring on all kinds of people. I'll have you on, Jason.
I will be there.
I
will be there. Thank you.
Yeah.
Hey, listen, I want to say thank you again.
You're welcome.
Join us for the next episode of the Loudmouth Project's Voices of Reason. If you have any comments about the show, please contact us via email at voramed@gmail.com or vorjasonl@gmail. You can also find us on Twitter at adonsports and at jasonlee1. Our show's Twitter handle is @VORPodcast. Check out our Facebook page, and you can find and subscribe to free episodes of our podcast on Google Podcasts, Apple Podcasts, or any of the places where you find interesting content. Be sure to review our show as well. We love to get your feedback, and it helps us grow our audience. Until next time, I'm Jason Lee. When you engage in passionate debate, do your best to keep your dialogue civil. Try to be the voice of reason.
Voices of Reason is a production of the Loudmouth Project.
A stranger with a gun came upon two teens taking pictures under a rising full moon. But violence is only the beginning of this story.
Sometimes I thought, there are no miracles. Yeah, there are, and this is a big one.
I'm Amy Donaldson, and I've spent my career talking about how lives are undone by violence. The Letter is a podcast about how lives are remade. Follow The Letter at theletterpodcast.com or wherever you get your podcasts.